Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. For the next two episodes, or from the previous episode to this one, however you want to word that, we are discussing the greatest movies and TV shows of the past 25 years. That's right, we are at the quarter century mark, so let's discuss the best movies and TV shows of the century, and this is part two, TV shows. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, I'm my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy.
Troy Heinrichs.
TV.
Woo!
Your favorite, right?
It is my favorite.
You love it.
I like the long-form content.
Was it hard for you, don't insert a joke here, was it difficult for you to nail down top 10 TV shows from a quarter century, or was it easy
hard,
for you?
Yeah, it was definitely difficult.
Okay. I was just wondering, because you watch
No, it wasn't actually.
Oh, like, really?
The top five are on my Instagram profile. So it's like, this was really no big deal.
No big debates. No, did you have a big debate, John? Did you have a big debate, internal debate? Like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I like this show.
I didn't really have that because, again, if you listen to the last episode, I did a lot of like emotional thinking on this. And so I didn't have a lot of those sorts of debates, but like, I know there's stuff that should be on my list that I couldn't even think of.
I think when you got down to 9 and 10, because you were like, oh my gosh, I only got two spots left. It gets a little bit more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But to like rifle off like that first eight was like, didn't even have to think about it.
I got to be honest. I mean, movies took me forever to nail it down to 10. And I probably could have, honestly, that list could change depending on the week.
Depending type of day. Yeah.
Yeah. Like how good or bad my day was going. But TV, bam, had the 10 right off the top of my head. I didn't even have to think that hard, which is surprising. And I watch a lot of TV too. But a lot of the stuff I thought, well, that's going to be on my list. Nope. It was interesting. Very interesting in getting to that debate. But before we get into that, you know, we're going to talk about how TV has evolved and what our listener top 10 TV shows from the first quarter century are and our favorite single memory of a TV show as well as our top 10s. But I'm just kind of curious, in your mind, how has TV changed? Because if you remember when the 2000s started, it really wasn't that serialized. And I think, let's just say 24 really kicked it off. I mean, in terms of serialized
or yeah, between 24 or Alias,
Buffy,
yeah.
Alias, those kinds of shows. I mean, really, like now everything is serialized. It's amazing to me how far that's come. And now TV, like each episode is connected now, where we used to have a lot of just capsule episodes.
But I think when you look at the differences between movies over the last 25 years and then look at TV over the last 25 years, the TV medium, I think, has gone through a way bigger shift and change in how TV operates. Because you think about in the 2001 alone, right? We're still recording stuff day and date event, VCR, Nielsen ratings are huge. You have mid-season, you have sweeps, you have all of these concepts in television are still occurring, you know, as the millennia kicks off. And then you get into the world of TiVo. And all of a sudden, digital video recording. And then I have the ability to skip commercials. And then I have the ability to go 2x speed on my shows with TiVo. And like that whole DVR evolution just changed how we watch television because it changed the landscape of how we have conversations. Like we come into, you know, 2005, 2006, and we're still having water cooler conversations at the office. Oh, did you see this last night? Did you see that last night? And then between TiVo, the iPhone coming out in 2008, podcasting becoming kind of, I wouldn't say mainstream, but this concept of TV podcasting specifically starts taking off.
We were part of that revolution,
you know? And like all of that just changed how TV existed to the point that Netflix shows up on the scene about that exact same time as well. There was a big inflection point between 2008 and 2010 of what TV meant for a lot of people and how we consume media, how we talk about media, how we share media. Social networking came on the scene about that same time. There's just a lot of change with the television format compared to the movie format. Movies have traditionally always been, you know, 90 minutes to 2 hours. You see it at the movie theater, popcorn's popcorn, you know, like that was sticky. TV went through a lot of change to the point where now we don't even talk about the big three networks, ABC, CBS, NBC. We're talking about Hulu, Netflix, Paramount, Apple TV Plus, HBO Max. Like, where is NBC, CBS, ABC? We don't even have that conversation anymore. I don't do the spreadsheet anymore because we don't talk about the networks anymore. I didn't even watch the upfronts this year. That's how changed it's been.
For you, and I will add to that. I mean, you know, you talk about Netflix and the whole binge model. And, you know, I actually had this conversation not too long ago with someone, is that if you really think about it, how our attention spans started getting shorter. And I know a lot of people say, well, because you can do everything on your phone, which is true. But I think that binge model helped fuel that. That fueled like audience impatience. And I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait. It really, really fueled that, to where now YouTube is the biggest streamer really in the world, because people don't, they just want to go to the next thing, go to the next thing, go to the next thing, go to the next thing. Reels, TikTok, all that stuff. Go to the next thing, go to the next. And I think binging started that immediacy, that need for immediacy at all times.
And it's funny because I was watching YouTube today, and I was actually watching a video that was from 6 years ago. So even YouTube now has reruns in a way. I just happened to find the video for the first time. And I'm like, this is really interesting content. I want to watch it now. And it's 6 years old already.
The other thing that I think has been a big change is that we've had, you know, it used to be in the 80s and 90s, movie stars was the big thing. Television stars were always trying to break into movies. They're always trying to get into the movies, make it, that was going to be their ticket to grandeur. But now we're to a point where we have A-list stars who are coming to television because they're finally able to start telling long form stories of stories they care about and stories they want to be a part of. But it's also not just the same thing over and over again. That's where we're doing a lot more innovative storytelling as television at the moment. And that's where a lot more stars are finding, not only is it just a great long form story, but also that's where they're finding the longevity in their careers. That's where some stars who were dying to break into movies are suddenly finding long-term success as television stars or working on television shows, because they're getting more consistent work and longer work, and they're getting more pay out of that whole thing.
That's a good point. And really, I think TV has led to, there are no more movie stars. I mean, maybe a Tom Cruise here and there or Brad Pitt, but typically no more movie stars, but there's a lot of TV stars. I mean, there's a lot, and it's reinvigorated a lot of careers. Jason Bateman, I mean, his whole career has just blown up thanks to streaming and the opportunities that he has on TV. Like on streaming, he's a huge star, and it's really fascinating to me how that's all just worked out. Al, it's exploded.
And the thing that blew my mind is like the show Shrinking. You have Harrison Ford on Shrinking.
Well, you have movie stars and everything.
Yeah, I know, but it's Harrison Ford.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, he's 85. Well, he can't pull a whip forever, you know?
But he was way up there in the movie star, like, you know, realm. And, like, here he is doing television.
True. And he's not the only one. Like, there's movie stars left and right. I mean, and it's a place where former movie stars can still make good quality content. You know, Reese Witherspoon kind of reinvented her whole career on TV with HBO and that sort of thing. I mean, that's just, it's amazing to me how storytelling has changed, because now I think a lot of actors just prefer to go there because they can tell longer, more detailed stories. I mean, granted, the episode count's a lot shorter though. Like, we're at 8 episodes and whatnot, and 8, 10, whatever. And it used to be 22, then it got down to 13. Now we're at about 8. Some things only get 6. I mean,
I think that's the sweet spot though.
Well,
I mean,
one would probably argue that it was always 13, and then you were on the hook to potentially pick up the back 9 to get to 22.
Well, that's proper TV, sure.
I mean, originally it was like you were only guaranteed that 13 episodes, and you had to see how that fall bow actually did.
But when Netflix started the binge model, it was 13. That's what they were going with. And there was a complete story. Like, it was a complete story. And now it's 8. And I think you, John, you're right. I think 8 is kind of the sweet spot.
It really is a sweet spot because, you know, I've been very famously commenting on stuff that I've been rewatching.
Very famously? I mean, are they talking about it in bus stops? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. Don't you know that they talk about me and other places, just not this podcast? Okay. Anyhow, I've mentioned plenty of times where I've rewatched shows that are long form television over and over again. And you're going to hear me say it again, but Supernatural, let's take that for example. If you cut it down 8, 10 episodes, solid adventure television show. You don't need all that filler stuff in there. You don't need all that, like what they threw in there for shits and giggles of it all. They just happened to do it because they had to do 24 episodes, and they did a really good job of building these characters out so that you want to hang out with them for 24 episodes. But if they were to remake it today, being 8, 9, 10 episodes, bet I'm in.
Fair enough.
I mean, Walking Dead's model was like perfect. It was 8 episodes for each half season. Like, it was a self-contained story that if they didn't even come back for the second half of the second 8, like, it was still a contained 8 episodes and you were good with that story.
Yeah, 8's the number. 8's the number. You know what's not the number? 47 seasons like The Walking Dead had.
Or still has. 11.
Yeah, it's still going, man. It's got like different variations. So, I mean,
it's going to pass. It's going to pass Grey's Anatomy at some point. It really is.
I don't think nothing will ever pass.
Nothing will pass Grey's at this
point. No. All right, what's your favorite single memory of a TV show so far this century? We're going to go opposite from the last episode, so we're going to flip it. So we'll go me, John, Troy. So my favorite single memory watching a TV show would probably be probably watching the Game of Thrones finale, I think, with like a bunch of friends that we had, because we had been regularly watching that series for I think since season 2, I want to say. And we had gotten together like every Sunday to watch the show, every time there was a new episode. And then the finale hit and we really kind of loved it. I know a lot of people didn't, and sorry for them, but I really enjoy the final season. Not as much as it could have been. It could have been fleshed out. Sure. Could have done with a couple more episodes, but I liked where it ended up. And outside of Bran the King, it's the only thing I really could disagree with heavily. But man, it was like the end of an era to, you know, I don't know if I'll ever have that experience again. I really don't. And that was really special. But I will throw in, because everybody else does, that's watching TV show. My favorite actual memory is going to the set of The Blacklist with Troy Heinrichs here and actually be invited to go on set and be part of a show for the 100th episode. But they brought us on set and we got to go rock around.
Did you just do an honorable mention?
Yeah. Yeah, because you guys do it all the freaking time, and that's worthy of it.
Yeah, but we don't yell at each other for doing
it. That's a combination. So that's really Troy and I. It's a shared experience.
Okay, so then Troy doesn't have to talk after this.
No, I still get my thing. I just don't have to do the honorable mention of it.
So did you do an honorable mention for Troy, too?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's what it was. It was for Troy. Yeah.
Is this like a...
It's Inception.
Okay. Because you know why?
Well, listen to the last episode. You'll learn all about it.
Troyception.
Because there were like three... Well, really four great moments that day. One was Amir being so excited to hang out with us and show us around the set. I thought was really cool. Two was the makeup artist head, Anthony Pepe. He was so stoked that we were there. Like genuinely, like we're excited to be there because it's like Blacklist. Like he was excited for us because he loved the podcast so much. Like that, like to see that, like this is someone on the show that's excited for our podcast. Like that's pretty so cool.
Yeah.
When Megan came out and was like, you guys want to stick around and watch me do a scene, right? And we were like, yeah.
Yeah, took us back and introduced us to Amanda McCarthy.
No. Like we were back back there. And then all of a sudden the director comes out from the episode and going like, you guys are new. Hi, I'm Andrew McCarthy. And Aaron and I are just like peeing our pants in the spot that we're sitting in going like, I can't believe this is happening right now.
I didn't pee my pants.
Look for Bernie at all?
You're pretty excited.
I was pretty excited. And he said, hi, I'm Andrew. And I just said, of course you are.
Of course
you are. Like, who doesn't know who Andrew McCarthy is?
It was a pretty great day. Especially to have like all of us sitting there like with like Entertainment Weekly and this outfit from Canada and
Hollywood Reporter and all that.
Apparently I should have gone first. So I'm just going to start cutting in over you guys so I can give my little crappy moment that I really love after listening to you guys talk about that. So here's my great moment. The 17-minute one shot from Hill House. Haunting of Hill House. I remember watching it unfoil on screen and I just stood up and I'm like, they're doing a one shot this entire time as you're traveling in and out of time as they're telling the story. And I thought it was the coolest thing. I was trying to think
of which episode. Now I remember. Okay. Now I remember it. Yeah.
That's great. I was trying to remember the episode too. I know it was 17 minutes though. It was 17 minutes of a one shot and it was just incredible how they did everything. My mind was just so blown. Huh?
I think it was episode 5, but your mind was blown. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was episode 5 too. My mind was just blown over how they pulled it off, especially when they're like, you're in so many different set locations, and so you know that they built a set specifically the way they did so they can move things around as they're throwing this out there, and they're going in and out of time. You're seeing the present, and then you're seeing the past, and then you're seeing the present again, and it's just I was on my feet that whole moment. I thought it was incredible.
Good choice.
Now, Troy, you can finish your story about the blacklist and then say like the thing that you really want to say.
Well, I believe we call it the one-er. It's a one-er, not a one-shot, but it's okay. My favorite one will forever be, for this 25-year period, still be the season 3 finale of Lost.
Not Penny's boat.
Not one. Penny's boat.
Yeah.
Charlie dying and the way he like does the crucifix over his... like was totally ad-libbed at that moment, and... Jack Bender kept it in the show, and then just the whole, like, we got to go back. And they're like, they're off the island? What? It's just like everybody losing their shit in that moment. And then the internet just going on fire. It was a really great water cooler. Cause I think that was the last like cool water cooler moment, because then podcasting, Twitter and everything kind of happens after that.
Well, I think Game of Thrones reinvented it for a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah.
For a little bit. Unfortunately, I mean, we might get it again with Stranger Things, the finale. We might get it, but I don't know. Just because they broke it up the way that they do, where you're going to get three drops, but I don't know. All right, guys.
There's a lot in that episode.
We got a lot for this episode. So you ready to hear the listener poll? Because remember, we have a poll that goes in our Facebook group, not our page,
but
our group. Here's a top 10 TV shows from the first quarter century.
According to the fans
of this decade, of this century. Ready?
Ready.
Last 25 years. Number 10. And this is a very surprising list. Very surprising. I'm being straight up. Number 10, Mr. Robot.
Okay.
I did not expect that to even crack the top 10, but it is number 10.
Yeah, same here.
That's because the listeners are good people. I love you guys.
Sure. So what did you do? Just like log in as your robot self and like vote for it in multiple...
He's got his own like Twitter monkeys that he's got doing for him.
Number 9 is The Good Place. What the fork?
Yeah, that's a great choice. I can buy that.
Okay, is it really that good?
I didn't love I have a problem with the way it's written, but at the concept and stuff about the show, like, yeah, it would definitely be up there.
Okay.
John should watch it.
I watched a couple episodes. It was okay.
Ooh, just okay though, huh?
Yeah, I didn't feel the need to have to go back.
You know what it was? It wasn't the Kristen Bell that I knew. It was... The character for me just was not jiving with Kristen, even though it's probably one of her better characters.
Okay.
Once you get done with the show. But initially, just wasn't jiving for me.
Well, number 8 is Firefly.
That's a good spot for a show that got so, like, blown over. Like, not blown over is not the right word. Pushed around and crapped on for as like it did by a network.
Yeah, people love it. I still adore it. Serenity almost made my top 10 list in the movie one last week. Number 7... I mean, it was in my first list. Number 7 is Alias. Troy, you got to love that one. Got to love it. I'm surprised it made this list, but hey, it's there. Sydney Bristow. Number 6, Downton Abbey. How about that?
Wow.
Yeah.
I can understand that.
That's a pretty popular show. I mean, it spawned a few movies too. So now we got number 5, top 5, Lost. Lost made the top 5. I'm sure, Troy, you're excited. Number 4, Ted Lasso.
Good space for it. I like it.
Yep. It's a little hot, little high, little recency bias, but okay.
No Schitt's Creek on this list. No
Schitt's Creek.
Number 3, no big surprise, Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad.
I wanted to put it on my list, but I couldn't justify it.
Well, that's just insane. Because it's, you know, you go look at best of lists, it's in every one of them.
It would have been on my list if it wasn't for the first season.
It's weird, man. It's a fantastic story. But anyway, hey, your list. You do what you want. Number 2, Stranger Things. People love the Stranger Things. They love it.
Recency bias on the height of that, but sure.
I don't know.
Definitely a top 10.
No, man. We haven't even had a new season in forever.
Yeah.
Not recent.
Season 2 is pretty...
What?
That show... No, I don't have a bad season in that show. One episode. The 9th episode.
Do we not remember 8th
episode?
Do we not remember
7th 8th episode? Whatever one it was.
11's golf.
Yeah, that's why I said one episode. There's one episode that sucks, and that was supposed to be like a spinoff that didn't take off. But everything else works. And that episode, you don't even have to watch it. It doesn't really affect anything. And number one, guesses?
Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Number one's Game of Thrones. I don't think that's a big surprise. All right, guys. Now we're going to go round robin, just like we did last time. And we're going to do, again, opposite. So it's me, John, then Troy, of our top 10 TV shows of the first quarter century. Are you guys ready? Are you ready to rock this?
Ready to rock.
Okay. My number 10 is, by my account, the best sketch comedy of all time. Yes, Saturday Night Live. I'm sorry. I know you've had a good run, but I think this is better because I can quote all of it.
And that's Living Chappelle Color
Show.
Oh.
What did you say?
In Living Color.
From 2000.
This 25 to years.
2025. Do you know how time works?
No. We talked about this.
God, man. No, the Chappelle Show. It's a fantastic sketch comedy that was smart, irreverent, and also very intelligent. Like, it was extremely topical. It was just brilliant. Just brilliant how he and his writers crafted that show. And it's just a shame and a crime that we didn't get more seasons of it, because I think, Dave Chappelle has shown, think what you want of some of his comedy choices. He's a brilliant stand-up comedian. He has a lot of intelligent insights into the world, and I could have just kept watching that show. And I'm still brokenhearted that he walked away from it, but I get, he had his reasons. So, but I love Chappelle's Show. So that's my number 10.
All right, so my number 10 is going to be a show that should have gotten more love on the main list of all the listeners, but hey, it is what it is. And it's a show that taught me a lot about love. It taught me a lot about appreciation of people of all sorts of worlds and likes and dislikes. And it taught me that, feeling sorry for rich people is kind of okay occasionally. And that's Schitt's Creek.
Oh, I thought it was The Bachelor.
No.
He had that joke just wound up, like, he couldn't even let you get the title out before he started to try to get that out.
He kept
there.
Going. Jeez. I was like, this fits.
Okay. Schitt's Creek is a great choice, John.
Thank you.
Although I don't agree that it's okay to empathize with review. I'm kidding. I wish I was one so bad.
What do you love the most about it?
Just the story about love in it. Every character has their own love story that makes sense, and all the love stories are different. They're not the same, and the growth that happens because of love is incredible. And I just love how well they put that out there.
Right on. Well, my number 10, mm-hmm. much like the listeners, is Mr. Robot. And really? I had a really hard time with this one to figure out like what was going to be in the 10th spot, because there's so many things that could go in here. One of them being like Station 11, but Station 11 only had the one season. So I was like, I can't justify that as a show. It's more like a miniseries in that regard. But Mr. Robot came on the scene, and it was so different in music style, in how the fact they actually brought like actual hackers in to do the coding when they showed the coding on the computers.
Oh yeah.
I thought that was really cool. And just this concept of like the fact that digital currency is going to be our downfall with the whole crypto and everything that was happening at the time. And then to come to find out that this show had nothing to do with any of that. It was actually about him and his relationship with his dad and shit that had happened between the two of them. So when you find out what's really going on at the end of it, you're just like, wow, I just went on an emotional ride that I had no business being on, but I'm so glad I did, because it like opened my eyes to a whole bunch of different things. And it's just really well done. That second season, the way that they hide where he currently is for like 6-7 episodes, and the way that they do it is just fantastic storytelling.
I need to go back to that. I never did finish Mr. Robot.
It takes a turn in that fourth season. You do not see it coming.
I have to go back to it. All right, are we ready for my number 9?
Yeah.
I'm just letting you know, I have no shame about this. I am very, very secure that this is one of my favorite shows. And I know, A, it never should have went longer than one season, maybe two, because I think the first two are fantastic. I don't know how certain characters are still alive or were still alive in the show. That makes no sense. There's a lot of retconning going on throughout this series, and I still love it. And that's Prison Break.
Well,
Nice. I love Prison Break.
Nice.
I've watched it multiple times. I love when I tell people that I love Prison Break and they tell me I don't know quality TV, and I tell them no right off because I don't care. I absolutely love watching Michael Scofield and Lincoln Burrows and somehow beat the system and break out of every freaking jail that's ever been created. I just love the show. I just have so much fun watching it, even though it makes no sense. Just love it.
It's a strong and powerful choice. I dig it.
Thank you.
All right, so my number nine is going to be a movie, a television show that I talked about often. It's a television show that makes no sense to most people, but for some reason it hits me right in my creative like mushy area that I call a brain, and it speaks to me on levels that I love so much because of like the subject matter and whatnot, and the characters are just great. And that's The OA, and that's the OA. For those who don't know, is a Netflix show. Only had two seasons. I wish it had more. They're actually talking. I heard that they're talking about maybe bringing it back somehow. But if they did, that would make me pretty happy.
Who's talking about it? You?
Probably me.
Okay. I haven't heard anybody talk about it.
I was probably standing in the corner talking about it to me, myself, and I.
Yeah, you just found a mirror, and you're like, oh, I hear they're bringing The OA back. Me too.
Yeah, me too.
They should shop it around to different streamers, because I think it'd be great on a different streamer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my number nine.
Number nine for me is the American turned Englishman in the football to the football in Ted Lasso.
I'm surprised it's number nine, but that's a strong choice.
It's this low on the list because of the fact that I don't think the second season was as strong as the first season, because they focused a lot more on the secondary characters in that second season. And then it kind of picked back around on the third season. So from that perspective, like I'm excited that they might be coming back to it, you know, as far as, you know, him doing Come Back to America and doing the women's side.
That's for sure it's happening. Yeah.
And it was like the rumor, but I don't know if it was like definite. The team that's behind Ted Lasso that created this, they understand dramedy and how to get the laughs, but also get the heartfelt pull on it. And because of that, it's definitely on the list. So
that's a good choice, man. It just missed mine. And I think maybe, I don't know, I guess I can't say like low seasons because I've got a show with only one season on here, but I think maybe because it's coming back and I feel like that's going to mess it up. I worry it's going to mess it up because I think it ended perfectly. Sometimes it's okay to leave it your height, you know, but I am glad it's coming back. I do love the show. So it's got some real emotion in it. And hey, positivity is not a bad thing. My number eight is the show that I kind of watched the first couple seasons, then it faded off. But in like the last few years, especially like through COVID and stuff, it has become like comfort TV to me. I constantly have the show as my background noise. I adore it. I love all the families in it. I've talked about Phil Dunphy many, many times. And Modern Family is just, that's some great family TV. It really, really is. It's just a funny comedy. I love how they basically, it's written like The Office to where cameras are always around, but they never, ever explain it. Like there's never any explanation as to why are they constantly looking at the camera, breaking the fourth wall, acting like cameras are there. They're doing interviews. They never explain why this is or what's going on. And I don't care. I'm all for it. It's just such a fun show. Every character works. Every character, every relationship, it all plays out. And it's one of the few shows that runs over 10 years that didn't hit a lull. Like not a season goes without me laughing consistently. So Modern Family.
Good choice.
That's a solid, solid choice. I like it. I'm going to go a little darker because why not? But True Detective season 5.
You're just picking one season?
Yeah. Well, because they're all different stories.
Okay. Well, so there isn't a True Detective season 5, number one.
Is it season 4?
Yeah.
I even looked it up and it, well, never mind. But anyhow, season 4. Sorry. Night Country.
Yes.
I really love the whodunit aspect of the story. I love the fact that they even tried to make it seem like it was more of a mystical kind of a ghost story that was happening behind the scenes too. At least that's what the way I felt when I was watching it. And that's why it's my number 8.
It's interesting that you just picked once. Well, I guess it's an anthology, so I guess that
counts. It's an anthology. Yeah,
it's your list. You do what you want, but
you keep questioning me on it.
Well, number one, because you didn't even know what season it was, but that's beside the point. But first, it's just surprising that you picked that one over the first one, because I think a lot of people would pick the first season. That's why I'm just mentioning
it. Although the first season is great. It's amazing. It is for sure. But I thought the fourth season
there you go.
Is better.
Okay. Fair enough.
This one should be no surprise that it's on the list. Probably on Aaron's as well. But damn it, if 24 shouldn't be here.
I'm not telling you. Maybe. Maybe not.
24 was a groundbreaking idea to do 1 hour of television every single week. And I remember vividly, I missed the train initially for season one. I was watching season two as a replay on FX And we got to the scene in the mid-season two where they blew up a nuclear bomb over the desert. And I was like, what is this show? Like, they just detonated a nuclear bomb on TV.
Yeah,
I have to watch it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is crazy. So I went back and watched season one on the Netflix DVD subscription and was blown away by the end of the first season. And like, and I'm in. And then season four happens. You're just like, what? No. And then season five, when Jack almost kills the president, and you're just like, this show's great.
Man, I didn't know you came to it that late.
I mean, mid-season two, that's not late.
True. It's not late. I mean, you're such a TV watcher. I figured you would have watched it long before then. That's all.
I just must have missed it or something. Or just something wasn't popping for me when it hit. I might have just moved to the Chicago area. So it was just that whole like transitional period.
Sure.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah. My number, where are we at? Seven? Number seven. You can take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. Firefly is absolutely in my top 10 list. That is a series, if you've never seen it, and so many people still have never seen it, that's where Nathan Fillion really cracked through in terms of audiences. But it's Han Solo. It's Han Solo in Joss Whedon's world. And I know we're not allowed to say that name, but he was a great writer and he really made some interesting TV. And I love that crew. I love that we got a payoff for that crew with the Serenity movie. It's just a series where it's only 14 episodes, I think, total?
Yeah, about 14.
It has stayed with me since then. And the funny part is I didn't watch it when it aired. I saw like one or two episodes and I'm like, okay. And I saw them out of order and I don't think it really mattered that much. I just, for whatever reason, I liked them, but you know, I didn't really want to make appointments. Then it hit Blu-ray or DVD, sorry. And that's when I finally found Firefly and it changed my life in a lot of ways. Loved it.
Solid choice. My number seven is, I mentioned it once already tonight, and it's going to be The Haunting of Hill House. I felt like this was something that was very different, very engaging, and this was horror done right for the television genre. And I feel like this was one of the first times we got something this close to being right on screen for television when it came to horror. And they played with every aspect they could with something that was episodic. And I fell in love with the whole story of it all.
Man. That's true. We don't talk enough about it. Now, would you consider it like the Flanagan franchise? Would you consider that a franchise or they're all individual kind of stories?
It's a really good question. I want to say the Flanagan franchise, but I feel like Midnight Club might kind of mess it up a little bit. Huh?
Oh, Midnight Club. That's right. There is a Midnight Club too.
Yeah, there was a Midnight Club. I feel like it tells its own story and it's all about grief, right? And it's an incredible story for itself. But it's the one that I did not connect with, like I connected with everything else. So for my own bias, it's hard for me to connect it as a Flanagan franchise. But yeah, I would go for that.
Some great horror in there, man.
Not a horror person. I've not seen it.
It's too bad. You're missing out. It's got some very spiritual elements to it. I mean, it's very interesting.
All right. Maybe. Because spirituality was one that kept me away from my number seven pick for a long time. Because especially as a person that went through broadcasting school and just dealing with the things that you deal with when you're trying to make productions, the gratuitous nudity thing just always bothered me. Like, just to show TNA is just something that never appealed to me. Like, I wanted to like have purpose and meaning in the story specifically. So I didn't get on the Game of Thrones train initially because of that. And also just access to HBO at the time. So I binged six seasons to get ready for season seven to be on the hype train with everybody else. And I think that was actually
I remember when you like barreling there and like every time a big moment would hit, oh, this was cool. And it'd be like reliving it, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, and I think for me, the binge watching of that was actually better because I was able to like keep up with like who's who, because it's such a big world and all the names, and the names are a little bit hard to pronounce sometimes.
Layered,
yeah. So just immersing in the world, I think, made me enjoy it. Like sometimes I was having a conversation the other day that the Red Wedding is like cool and all, but actually I think I like the season four finale when they attack the wall like much more than the Red Wedding, because Red Wedding's like shock and awe. Right. But the fight against the wall, it's like, we're finally at this point. Like, yes, I've been waiting for this for like, you know, 2 weeks because I'd literally been watching like every waking minute I could. But yeah, Game of Thrones at number seven, just because I was late to the party. It's lower on the list for that reason.
I mean, it's your list wherever you want it. You know. Yeah. Speaking of my number six, because we're moving into six, right? That is one that's already been mentioned, but I'll tell you why I love it, and that's Schitt's Creek, and that's a show I think a lot of people came to late. I don't know many people that were there from the beginning for that one.
No, it really benefited from the pandemic.
Yeah, it really did, because you're stuck at home. And I remember watching the first season going, I don't get it. I don't get what people are raving about. I really don't. And then there's somewhere in the second season, I think maybe it's even when you get, it wasn't quite to the end. There's just some little things that happened in the second season. It really started clicking with me. And even when I rewatched, because I rewatched it multiple times, so it really does speak to me now. That first season, I don't think is the strongest, but it's very important to establishing everything you build to. And, you know, John, you talked about it earlier. Really, it spoke to a loving relationships of all kinds without making it a big deal, without having to point out homosexuality or polyamorous or just whatever sexual situation you're in or whatever love relationship you're in, familial, friendly, anything. Like, it just treated it as very normal. It was a very accepting show. It was, I think the best part about it is you had these four rich assholes. They were like the worst people in the show for a big part, but they grow. And they grow because of the people who in any other show would be seen as the racist, the sexist, the misogynist. You know, that's what they would be seen in any other show. But in this show, they treated the actual townsfolk, the country bumpkins, if you will, as people of real growth, and like they were just open to everybody. They were just welcoming, so welcoming. They'd give them, they'd rib them here and there and everything else, but they were just so welcoming and loving. And it's just in a time when we were scared during COVID and whatnot, and people were petrified and they were losing loved ones and whatnot, it brought people together. And I think that's a beautiful thing for any show.
Such a strong pick. My number six is a show that I keep on wanting to say it's movies, but it's a show that
they
are
movies from these days.
Yeah, it was a show from the very first commercial, for the very first trailer to it, I was shouting that this was going to be magic on screen, and that's going to be Stranger Things. I was so convinced we were about to see something magical happen that I couldn't wait to be able to see it. The trailer told me Amblin, the trailer told me Goonies mixed with some more Amblin, like whatever you want to call it, it's there, and it's... And it was the 80s nostalgia told in such a way that it was fresh and brand new. So it found a way to take that nostalgia aspect, but make it so new that we all take ownership of it. No matter what the age range of the person watching it, we all fell in love with the same storytelling. And that's why Stranger Things is my number six.
Cool. Because twins.
See?
I have that at number six as well, because all of the things you said are, John, I'm a child of the 80s. I grew up with E.T., I grew up with Goonies, I grew up with Adventure, and just the same thing. Saw the trailer and I was like, what is this and when is it going to be on? I have to watch it. And then when season three comes around and you're like, I'm actually reliving my childhood, like going to the mall and hanging out at the pool and doing all this. It's like, this is like my jam. And then, Sadie Sink and running up that hill away from Vecna in season four. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, powerful television moment.
Some of the shit you used to get away with.
Yeah. I'm still not a super fan of season two. I thought it went a little bit off the rails compared to the first season, but season three saved it. And then season four was just epic. So cannot wait for the conclusion.
I mean, season four is just all mini movies. Really? I mean, every one of them is about feature length. It was insane.
And season five will be
all feature length. I'm sure. Yeah. They just can't stop making their movies. Fine by me. I mean, it better pay off though, because we've been like, years since the last season.
It has been a while.
I'm getting tired of
that. Those kids are in college and, you know, having kids and all that stuff by now.
Those kids are like adults. They're driving garbage trucks and whatnot. Like, they have real jobs at this mm-hmm. point. Not even in school. All right. So my number, where are we at? Five? We're in the top five.
Top five.
Okay. All right. I never knew that I could love making meth. I just didn't know it. And Walter White and Jesse Pinkman introduced me to it. And I do agree with what Troy said earlier, the first seven episodes, like, it takes a while for Breaking Bad to get going. I almost gave up on that show multiple times. But once I got to that, finished that first season and that second season hits and everything, like, you see how much this is a building block. This is the domino effect. Like, this is definitely, they've been setting them up so they could knock them down. And then as soon as you hit season two, from that point forward, it is just like the dominoes are falling. And it keeps falling. The intensity keeps amping up. There's no missed beats. They ended on a perfect note. They don't like go too long or too short. They really like, it's one of the few almost perfect shows. Like, it's just a matter of they nailed the landing. They just took a little longer to get going, but it really, they needed that to really build it up. It's one of the few shows where I'll say, you know what? You need to finish that first season to really get a grasp of every character and where it's going and who he is. Because this is not a character who is meant to be, he's not an awful guy. He's just a guy who just can't get over his own ego. And he finally, he's just like a lot of people. You know, you get a little taste of power and you start losing it. And Breaking Bad is a phenomenal series. I'm sorry you guys don't see it that way, but it is.
Oh, it's a phenomenal series. It just didn't make my top 10 because of that issue of the first season.
Yeah, no, same thing. It's a great series, but I had to be bought into it. It was one of those series where like somebody had to tell me, oh, you just got to get past this amount of episodes and then you're going to be able to get into it. So that's why I didn't go for it all the way. Unlike this other show that I'm about to talk about for my number five, and it's at my number five partially because, it's new, right? So that's whatever that newness bias that that Troy mentioned a couple times.
That's kind of why Reacher's not like in my top 10 is because it's very much the recency bias. I'm afraid like that's a big factor for it. So
yeah, like the same thing here. However, the thing I'll say about this show, because we're only into two episodes, and it's a show that, especially in the second season, made me cry on a regular basis, and that's Shrinking. Because of the way it deals with grief, the way it deals with love, about building a found family, and those interactions between everyone. These are all things that I either strive for or want or need or have to figure out in my life. And it reaches me on such a level that it touches me every single time I watch an episode. So that's why Shrinking is my number five.
Oh, that's very sweet.
This one, I think I'm disappointed that I had to put it as low as I did. But there was this giant red ball that turned a bunch of people into zombies. And I'm like, what the F is happening here? And because of that, it dropped all the way down to number five for me. But that's Alias.
Hmm.
Alias is probably like one of my most favorite shows because I was just ecstatic that we finally had a female-led, kick-ass, costume-changing mystery with Rimbaldi, the whole concept of everything that was here, like all of the people that were on this show, right, from Ron Rifkin and Victor Garber, and you know, it's a J.J. Abrams property, and it's just like, you know, this is where Bradley Cooper like starts coming onto the scene, and everything about it is just like, this is like, wow, what am I watching right now? And then it kind of screwed the pooch for a little bit, and then it saved itself at the end because the finale is freaking fantastic if you've been watching all the way along. But yeah, it's definitely one of the ones that was up there. It was a post Super Bowl, got a post Super Bowl spot for probably one of the best episodes in season two. So yeah, definitely really enjoyed Alias for everything that it brought to the table and then what it set up for things that came down the road afterwards.
I love Alias too. Such a great show, especially I like season five. I know it didn't get a lot of love, but I like season five and I like how it ended, especially when they finally ended that Rimbaldi nonsense. That's a good show. My number four, moving right along, We Dug Cole Together is a line that still breaks my heart. And if you've ever watched Justified, you know why. It's just a show that starts off being about, it's Raylan Givens. He's, you know, a U.S. Marshal who goes back to his hometown in Kentucky and he's dealing with old foes and old demons and whatnot. And of course, he comes across Boyd Crowder, who's played by Walton Goggins before he's what he is now. And, you know, he becomes one of the best bad guys in television because he's very nuanced, he's very layered, etc. But it's, you know, the first season is kind of like episode of the week, trying to catch different criminals. And that really settles into a more serialized nature. And season two, I think, is the best season of all of them. But it's a show that completely ends at the exact right moment and note. And it really kind of gives you a full arc for all the characters, really completes their journeys. I know there's a spinoff. I'm not including Primeval in this. I'm only counting the original series proper, because that ending just can't be undone as far as I'm concerned, because it's just handled so beautifully. And it's just a series that sits with me still.
I dig it. I never actually had a chance to sit down and watch it, but I dig that choice for you.
You never had a chance, huh? These years, you didn't have any time where you could sit down and watch one of the best shows on television.
No, but you know what I did watch a lot?
Hmm.
Fringe.
Yeah.
And that's why it's my number four. I loved Fringe. It's my escapism show. It's the show that I disappear into whenever I need to like take a break from the real world. I love the stories behind it and what they did with science and how they kind of pushed it around to make it make sense in the way they did. So that's why I love Fringe so much.
I loved Fringe until it got to the split universes, and then it lost me. I tried so hard. I was really into it until then, and then it lost me.
And it got to the whole thing is the split universe.
No, from the beginning. No. Basically, their upside down version. Was it season four?
Oh, the reset, because the machine reset everything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where it got a little too heady for me.
That was the Leonard Nimoy season, though.
I'm sure it was your favorite one, because it's just like bonkers.
No, I have challenges with season four. You're not alone there. But I didn't put it as my number four, because Battlestar Galactica got that spot. Mm,
that's a good choice.
2004.
It's a good, solid pick.
Battlestar Galactica is a show that took a chance because they actually released a movie first and then said, okay, well, if the movie does well, maybe we're going to do a TV show. So if you're coming into Battlestar Galactica and start the TV show, because it jumps in with this episode 33, and what you don't understand that's happening is you're thrown in right into the middle of the shit, because Battlestar Galactica is the command ship for the entire fleet, and all of the humans that are left are only in space in these ships, and they have a jump drive and they have to jump in order to move to the next spot, and they're being chased by this relentless enemy, and every 33 minutes is how long it takes for the jump drive to recharge, and every 33 minutes they're literally just escaping in the nick of time before the Cylons catch up to them. And for that first episode, you're just like, you're getting as exhausted as the crew while you're watching that entire first episode. It's a fantastic way to start a show. But I definitely recommend watching the movie, because you get a little bit of backstory on the characters before jumping in. But yeah, Battlestar for a reboot series, because it was obviously around in the 70s, they did a really great job changing up some of the characters. Edward James Olmos, who played the Admiral, Bill Odama, like just commanding. Like the speech he gives, like in that first episode, you're just like, from that day forward, every time you see anybody, you're like, so say we all. I'm on board. I'm on the team. I get what's going on. Right. And then the ability to use frack as a replacement for the F word to get around it, and just the amount of times they say it is just so just juicy as a broadcasting person. Like I can remember just walking around at work and just being like, frack this stuff. It was so great. Like it's such a good show to watch for sure.
Good Place stole that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
With the fork.
Yeah. Yep. That's absolutely stolen from Battlestar Galactica.
Maybe why I didn't like Good Place so much, because I was like, hey, we did it first.
Jesus. Now we're on our top three, and we talked about it plenty, but that's Game of Thrones is the one that I want to talk about for my number three. It could be higher if they had a couple more episodes in the last couple seasons, but I've rewatched it multiple times. It sticks the landing. I don't have any problem with it. I do, like I said, Bran is the king is probably the only thing that really I have a struggle with, but everything else I think lands the plane just fine. And I just love the experiences I had with that show. There's a lot of memories I have with Game of Thrones. It's not my kind of show. I don't really love really chatty fantasy show. And it's really fascinating because the first season there's zero, almost zero in terms of special effects in that respect. It's really just a normal, it's like a Renaissance fair. And then it just builds into the sci-fi spectacle that it became. And, you know, it just became absolutely stunning as a series in terms of visual effects on television. And I just love the characters, and I love where the journey took me. And do I have some issues here and there? Sure. I have them with every show I've ever watched. There's no show that I would consider perfect. So I still love Game of Thrones, and there's no bad memories for me. Just nothing but good memories.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and co-sign that, because that is my number three as well.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, then my number three is not Game of Thrones.
Well, this list sucks. I already don't like your list.
I already talked about it. That's why. Oh. So I'll go back to Arjun though and say Fringe gets the number three spot. And the reason for that is because Fringe, I think, was for the 2000s and beyond what X-Files was for Aaron and I. Like, I know Aaron and I really enjoyed the X-Files and what it brought to the table.
Absolutely.
And so this was like a new version. It felt like a new version of the X-Files. And then when it had the same creative team that was behind Alias, and it's also a J.J. Abrams property, and Joshua Jackson shows up, and then John Noble shows up, and you're just like, I don't care who this new name, no name actress is, you know, and Anna Torv. I'm just going to watch this for Pacey and John Noble. And it's like, and this is great. And it's so fascinating on where they go. And then when you get into the whole multiple universes and multiple ways of thinking and just science, and then what you're telling me that Leonard Nimoy is here, and you're, what's going on? But it also connected me to the whole world of people that I now consider my friends in the podcasting space, because it was Fringe that was really the one show I started to interact with podcasts on a regular basis.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's true.
That's how I met my friend Daryl Darnell. That's how I met my friend Wayne. Wayne and I started doing podcasts together. So like Fringe is like a pivotal moment. It has some challenges in the show, which is why it's not higher than number three for me, especially in that fourth season. But overall, like the moment when that finale hits and, you know, Josh Jackson's sitting there, right? Peter's holding the envelope from Walter. You're just like, oh, so good. So good.
So good.
So good.
So good.
All right. Well, my number two, you already talked about Troy, but it's way up on my list. I absolutely love 24. I have rewatched the seasons multiple times. I don't have a bad season of 24, in my opinion. There's a couple bad, less stellar episodes, but man, I just love 24. Jack Bauer is one of the best characters on TV this century, probably in all of entertainment for me. I think he's become, he's basically James Bond. He's, you know, John Wick, Jason Bourne. Like, he's become synonymous with ass kickery. Like, that's Jack Bauer now. And we had 9 seasons of fantastic ass kicking and world saving
and a movie.
Yeah, people always forget that there was one little spin-off movie. It's just a series I love, and every season is, you know, I agreed, like the first season was very much, it was kind of a, what were we trying, we were just trying to be kitsch and cute and doing this new little thing by having this real-time element, and that was kind of the gimmick for the show. But then it really worked well. Now, granted, how he got around town, yeah, you know, as the show went, you really have to start swallowing that with a grain of salt. But it still works. It still worked in every level. And man, Jack Bauer was a guy you could always count on to do the right thing, to get it done. He never put himself before the country. It was always about what's best for everyone. He was about saving lives. Even when people were at risk, he was about saving lives. Even when it would have been easier for him to forgo it, he was about saving lives. He's the kind of hero you wanted. And it was really the beginning of the establishment of the anti-hero, was Jack Bauer.
I agree with that assessment.
My number two is a movie a TV show we already talked about, and that's Firefly. I loved it for everything it exposed me to. I had great moments watching it over and over again with my friends, and that's how I got introduced to it, was that they went and saw the movie, and then they bought the TV show, brought it home, and we watched it all together. And
well, that's, it's cool. Just, that's the opposite of what most people experience. That,
yeah,
that's cool.
Absolutely. And it was great was that they knew what happened to watch the movie. They never told me until I finally sat down and watched the movie. So it was a good time. So that's why it was a great moment in time. That's why it's my number two.
Great community too. The Broncos are a great community.
Definitely. No one's talked about this one yet, except for the fans, because the fans, you're awesome. But there were a lot of eyeballs on this show. A lot of confusion, a lot of conversation, a lot of communities, a lot of friendships. It, exactly what we went through for 6 seasons of Lost was understanding what these people were going through in their lives while they were trapped on this island, and the things that they had to overcome and the things that they had to put right in their lives, and to do that journey with a community of fans in the water cooler moment, on the podcasts, on the message boards, in the alternate reality games, Like it was just, it was a time of television that I thought was really exciting because it was something we hadn't seen before. $1 million on a pilot, you know, and just the scope and grandeur of those first two episodes going like Charlie puts the best at the end when he's just like, where the hell are we? And I was like, that's exactly how television as a medium felt in that moment is like, where the hell are we? Like this is movie quality entertainment we're getting on the small screen. So I think Lost changed a lot for in the entertainment industry. I think without Lost, you don't get things like Game of Thrones down the line. It's a thing for TV that will always be like in like the Hall of Fame archive situation of things you don't, I mean, and literally it's funny when you think about the opening credit sequence, there's a lot of talk about opening credit sequences are too long because you're wasting 2.5 minutes, like showing all of this fancy artwork and whatnot. You just need to get right into it. And we lose the title sequence. Lost was literally JJ freaking around on his computer with some fonts and stuff, and then just animated what he had made on his computer. It wasn't anything special, and it just stuck. And that became the opening credit with the Lost floating thing. So it's just, it's a cool story.
If it wouldn't have been for that last season. No, I'm glad I'm really kind of surprised it's not number one, which, well, I feel like I know what number one is, but I'm hoping it's not what I think it is.
Ooh, I'm excited for you to guess. You'll have to wait.
We'll find out.
Huh. Tell me what your number one is, though, Aaron.
We are on the number one. This is it. All right. The final episode or the final episode, the final pick for your top 10 of the last quarter century. So my number one, it's not going to be any surprise, but in case you've never listened before, Sean Spencer is a terrible friend. He really is. he's not the best friend to old Guster, but I will tell you, like, their friendship is something that I think everybody is envious of. There's just something about Psych that hits me in every level. I've seen every episode at least 10 times, at least, if not more. It's something that is my, for the longest time, was my comfort TV until I finally just like burned it out. And I'm like, all right, I guess I'm going to Modern Family now. Because, I mean, it started off, the first season is very, like, it's trying to be Monk with jokes, right? And it's really about Sean Spencer, who pretends to be psychic to solve crimes. And him and his friend, he drags his friend Gus along. And it's really more about Sean Spencer. But as soon as season two hits, like, they realize what they had with these two, like magic in a bottle, and they just start like really making it more about their friendship and the idiots that they are, that they just can't stop making us laugh. They can't stop doing ridiculousness and maybe accidentally solving a crime along the way. Like that's what the show became. And it's just something I absolutely adore. It puts a smile on my face anytime it's on. They made 3 movies after the series ended, still make me laugh. Everything about it. There's even the final season isn't the best season. The last episode, though, is fantastic. I just love how it absolutely ends. And the 3 movies actually are really, really good. It's just, it's something that, it just makes me happy. Like, it's literally a show that makes me happy. And how much TV can do that, even after you've rewatched it so many times. It's just something to be said. I love Psych.
All right, I had her on my list and I took it off. I put her back on my list and I took it off. I had her on my list and I took it off again. I love Psych for all the same reasons that you just mentioned. It's a great show for the friendship aspect of it, the quippiness to it, the mysteries that are kind of like not really there, but still there. But the relationships are what make that show so important.
And with Sean and his dad, Sean and Juliet, yeah. Yes, but Sean and his dad, there's just something about that which really speaks home to me too.
Aaron loves the show so much that he had almost had a chance to interview Dulé Hill and James Roday at WizardCon, and then just schedules didn't align for them to be here, so it couldn't happen. So funds were raised and such so that we could get Dulé Hill to send Aaron a cameo for his birthday 1 year.
Yeah, that was really cool.
And just the amount of love he put into that cameo for Aaron, I thought was so cool.
It was very cool.
Just so that he could have that, because, oh man, it's such a good show.
I got you a John Noble cameo, didn't I?
You did. All you right. did.
Jeez. Yeah. You mentioned that when you were talking about your fringe love, you son of
a
bitch.
It was your gift to me. I didn't want to, like, you know.
All right. Nice guy. All right. What do you got, John? What's your number one?
So in the same vein of like Psych, I have to mention this movie because this.
Damn it, man.
Again, this television
show. These are TV shows. These are like small little movies.
Yeah. Only this movie, this television show has such a big place in my heart, because it, and that's how I Met Your Mother.
Okay.
I talk about it
as your number one show. Of the 25 years.
Of 25 years is how I met.
Yes, because it's a show that teaches you it's okay to fall in love. It's a show that teaches you that it's okay to give your all to a person. It's a show that teaches you that no matter what inane thing that is going on in your life, that if you're going to make a decision to take care of somebody, no matter what ends up happening to you, that's what love is all about. And I love that aspect of it. Ted Mosby teaches us that it's okay to be a romantic and a hopelessly lost romantic at that. And I love that aspect of it. Marshall and Lily teach us that it's okay to be a couple that are so comfortable with each other that they lose themselves in each other, but then they get lost about each other at the same time. And then they come together again. And those moments where they come apart and come back together again, they're not catastrophic. They're just things that happen. And they just are beautiful moments that within a marriage. Barney teaches us that it's that throughout all the pain and that we have and we carry, and that we can develop a life that becomes legendary, that becomes like our armor is something that is a story that we build around us and a way we live our lives. But if you get somebody inside of you that is close to you, that you will do anything possible to make sure they're okay. And that's why Barney, even though a lecherous fiend of a character, is really quite beautiful of a character. And Robin is just great. I unfortunately can't say anything wax philosophically about Robin, but she is just a strong female character that holds up her side of the bargain when it comes to absolutely every moment of this story. And she is constantly challenging everyone around her. And she's just built this realm that makes sense. And as much as this whole series gets gets crap for the way it ended, as I've aged over the years and rewatched it, I really understand the story they're trying to tell and how it makes me feel. And that's why it's my favorite show.
I love that for you.
I love that for you too. I like how you worked legendary guys in there. I know that's his catchphrase. That's about all I know.
That's his catchphrase. Yeah.
Because you know why, Arjun?
Why?
Same.
What?
What?
Same.
This is a shocker.
Until the finale of that show happened. And then I was like, nope. Right down there below the top 20. The finale totally tanked that show. So it is not my number one.
Okay. See, that's hurtful. That was hurtful.
I got duped too.
It is not. It is a great show. It is.
I would have been shocked because I've heard you bitch about that ending multiple. I know you loved it, but
man, I loved it. It was so great. Oh, and then Barney is so great. Like the slap bit, everything about that show is so great. And I was like, and Friends did it too, and Big Bang Theory did it too. There's nothing really original about it, so to put it in a top 10 for 25 years, it just that doesn't jive. Psych, however, Psych is a really great show. Psych has this great bromance that you just fall in love with, and this the concepts of like Gus is a table and Blueberry and the relationship with his dad, and just there's a lot there that it owes so much. To the number one show on my list.
I can tell you what it is. I haven't looked at your list, but I bet you I can guess.
You can say it.
Scrubs. Yeah.
By far, Scrubs is the one television show in the last 25 years where you can sit down and literally hang out with your friends for the first time. Like it was like going back to like Cheers or some of those early comedies back in the day. Like when you sat down to watch Scrubs, you knew you were going to get laughter, you were going to get a life lesson, you were going to get the same things Arjun just talked about for How I Met Your Mother with his show, for him, like the love, the deep care, the concern, the mentorship with Cox, the insults from Cox. Scrubs is a wholly different independent thing that I actually changed this to be in the number one spot this morning, because it was number two behind Lost until this morning. And I went back.
You bumped it above Lost.
I bumped it above Lost because this morning I sat down and I was like, you know what? I have this like fond memory of what we consider to be the finale, season 8, final two episodes of season 8. We don't talk about season 9, doesn't exist. Very nervous about the revival that's coming down the road. But season 8's finale is probably one of the best television finales ever made. There's an episode in season 3, we've talked about it on this podcast, that is like the best TV show to teach people how to write television shows. My mistake. But the finale, I watched it this morning again, and I just went, this is why I think I am the way I am today. And the things that it teaches in that finale episode is so, so deep that when you walk away from it, it's just like, there's no real big fanfare. Like the last shot is him just driving away from the hospital and it's over. And you're just kind of like, wow, like he just spent like 8 years of this career trying to figure out who he was as a person. And I think we all went on that journey with him at the same time.
Man, I really gotta give Scrubs a chance. I have never seen an entire episode.
Oh, if you like, dude, if you like Psych, you have to watch it.
Yeah, I'm really surprised.
You might hate it because you like Psych so much. That's the problem.
Because it'll seem so similar.
It'll seem so similar.
Psych came first, didn't it?
No, Scrubs came first.
Scrubs came way first.
Okay.
You'll love it because you are Dr. Cox.
Oh, I guess Scrubs. All right. I had to check your work and you were correct. 2001 is when Scrubs started. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's a great 8-season ride. And then just don't pretend 9 ever exists.
Well, so 9 is not a good season?
No. 9 is a completely different format. It's a completely different network. It's kind of like it's basically like we don't talk about Blacklist season 9 and 10, which is why it wasn't in my top 10. Same. Because season 9 and 10 exist.
That's exactly why I couldn't make mine.
Yeah.
Well, that the last few seasons were getting a little rough.
Right. But yeah. But I mean, if Blacklist would have ended at season 8, it would have been in the top 10, but it didn't. So.
Oh, if they would have ended where they intended to end it, where Boca Camp intended to. By the way, season 8, if you didn't know, that is where Boca Camp wanted it to end. Just so you know. The show creator, that's where the show ends. So you don't ever have to watch seasons 9 and 10.
If you don't want to.
If you don't want to, you're better off.
9's not bad, but.
You don't need it.
10 is pretty junk.
Pretty junk. So okay, maybe I will try to give Scrubs a try. I'll find it now.
It'll be a good, if you're like rewatching episodes of Psych before you go to bed, like just put Scrubs on instead.
So is Scrubs, what was season 9? I just brought it back on another network.
NBC canceled it was over. ABC picked it up, so ABC then started to air it, and they changed it so that it's a med school.
Yeah, they changed everything about it. Not even the same hospital, not even the same, like Cox, barely the same people in it.
Cox is in it. And then and that's part of the problem is that Turk, JD, Cox are in the med school version and it just
didn't work.
Kind of cheapens the whole point of the finale.
Okay. Fair enough. Guys, that's a good, that's a lot of good TV. I hope everybody, and I really don't know what a lot of your lists are. So be sure to put in the comments and whatnot, like on Facebook and whatnot, like what's your favorite shows and what we're missing and what gems, because the problem with TV these days, there's 500 scripted shows now.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah. And none of us picked a reality show. So let's just go to pick one. If you had to pick one reality show, John, I'm going to guess Bake Off for you.
Face Off.
Face Off?
Face Off, the makeup show.
Okay.
The makeup show. It's a movie makeup show.
Troy, I'm guessing Survivor.
You got it.
And mine would be, can you guess?
Alone.
Alone. Hey, look, we do know each other. There you go. Guys, we're all friends here. TV's changed a lot, man. It's amazing how, 25 years ago, I would never believe that I would watch as much television as I do now. Because I honestly didn't used to watch that much TV. But they've made so many strides. Like, now it rivals film. So, the stories are deeper, they're more meaningful, they're more well written. I don't know where all these writers were hiding for years, probably trying to get jobs, I guess. Yeah, that's it. So anything in closing, you guys?
Grey's Anatomy is still on the air after 25 years.
How was that not in, if you watch a show for, I think if you watch a show for 20 plus years, it should mandatorily be in your top 10, shouldn't it?
No, it's in the top 20. There's a lot in the next 10 that are like probably right on the fringe there, being in that 10th spot. But the finale of Mr. Robot just made you go, boo! So it bumped it up.
Anything in closing from you, John?
Don't watch Grey's Anatomy. Just don't do it. It's not even good enough to make it in his top 10, and he talks about it at least every other episode.
He should give Law and Order a little love, too, and NCIS, yeah, and CSI, and all these crazy franchises that have just had 4,000 episodes. I mean,
Dateline. Yeah.
No, Dateline, you know? That's a news show. That's not the same damn thing. Come on. SVU is a pretty impressive show because I still can throw one of those on, even new season, old season, middle season, doesn't matter. Still enjoy them.
And technically, that would have counted because it would have been the 99-2000 year was the first season.
Yeah, it would have counted. I mean, if it had new seasons in 2000 or after. I mean, X-Files had a couple seasons in the 2000s, but they all sucked. So, no, wasn't going to add that. All right, guys, I think that's going to do it. I think we are done with this quarter century. So we'll be back to normal podcasts next time. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you appreciate this, and I'd like to know what your top movies and TV shows of this quarter century are. So find us in the socials and hit us up and let us know. We'd appreciate it. So remember, the next time you, well, for TV, the next time you sit comfortably on your couch, streaming whatever the hell it is, or watching a network, if you still have one, buy popcorn. I can't remember the last network show I would watch. Well, I guess Tracker, but I watched it on Paramount. Does it count if I watched on a streamer?
I don't think it counts.
Did you watch Dr. Odyssey?
That's canceled.
Did you watch it, though?
No.
No?
Why would I? No.
You can now. It's been canceled, and it kind of has an end. So there you go.
Pass.
So is that a show or a limited series?
Well, they wanted it to be a show. It just became a limited series.